were talking, Pawpaw, about the fireside chat as soon as the tape went off. That's what you told me that was. What was your feelings like? What Mr. Roosevelt, how did he make you feel personally, and how did he make the people of the morale feel when he would give these speeches? Wasn't he quite a motivator?
Yes, I'd say so. He had an appealing voice, as you've heard it recorded about when he made the declaration of war against Japan in the White House.
Yes.
It seemed that people listened, looked forward to Saturday night, that it was the number one on the most of the people's concerned to be sure to hear that.
Yes.
And he always, the program where the boys went out and camped, what was it called? It was a program that had, they sent most of the money home. They got, say, about 40.
CCC?
Yeah.
They had made $25 and they had to, send 20 home? Is that
Something like
something,
that.
Yes.
But that movement was improved. A lot of forest land.
And trees. Roosevelt was big in environmental too, right?
Yeah.
And he loved the environment. So you're saying his talks inspired people and he showed results. So you assess him as a great motivator and just a savior. I know we're back on Mr. Roosevelt again, but my opinion, all the studying that I've done and looked at this as Mr. Roosevelt, I would sum him up as a savior also during that time.
Yeah, the fact that he didn't have to politic to get reelected.
Yes.
Even the third time, he didn't make a half a dozen speeches, what you'd call political speeches, off out on in the country, Of course, his handicap was one reason. There's something about, he died at Warm Springs, Georgia, and we had moved to First Baptist Church Union Springs a week before, and we were sitting in Holmes Cafe when Mr. Carlton Moore came on the radio, interrupted it, and you could tell he was excited and announced about his death. And the thing that shook me up somewhat was the fact that I was sitting there in 40 miles of where the man had died. But that was during the war. The whereabouts of the president never was known. Now they know every move he makes and every room he's in and everybody he talks to and some that he doesn't talk to.
Well, Papa, we're about to wind down this interview. Is there any other things? I've got a couple more questions that you would like to add on FDR. Or you think we pretty well covered him? On the governor of Mr. Graves and Mr. Miller. Is there any other things that you'd like to add on that, or the mentality of the people, or you think we've pretty well covered that as you saw it, or is there anything else that you think we ought to add?
Well, like I say, my experience might be somewhat different from a lot of the poor people that went through the Depression, but as far as being hungry, I don't know what you're talking about there.
Right.
But I think the leaders that we had chosen during that time were as efficient as any we've ever had in staring us through the situations under the conditions. Mm-hmm. Looking back, that's hindsight, but
right
at the time.
I can remember 26 years old, but I can remember eating a lot of times over at your house, brothers and I, and you saying that, you know, son, y'all don't need to leave that on the plate, because if you'd left that on the plate at our house during the period of time that we're talking about now, we'd had it for lunch. If you didn't eat it in lunch, you'd eat it for supper.
If we poured out too much syrup in the plate and didn't eat it, she saw that plate was carefully kept and it was set back at our plate supper. But she didn't have to do that but one or two times, you know.
And you learned to eat what was on your plate.
Children can learn mighty fast if the right conditions are put forth.
That's true. What do y'all usually eat for breakfast? I know we're back on the food again, but this is interesting.
Well, we had sausage, bacon, eggs, and biscuit, and thick and gravy, what else do you need for breakfast?
That's all.
Milk. We'd have milk. We children would always have milk. We wanted it.
What y'all do for lunch and supper? I mean, did she make? I know back in the winter it'd be kind. It would be.
Well, we'd go to school. We'd carry lunch to school in a lard bucket, a half gallon lard bucket, stick the holes in it to get it air, and we'd take sometimes half a cup of syrup and put butter on the top of that and biscuit and have that for our dessert at school.
In supper, usually, I know y'all had a variety of things. Did y'all eat a lot of
milk and bread and sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, and kept those pretty well through the season, you know. And as I said, a lot of canned stuff, tomatoes. Mother could make a 2 or 3 gallon pot of tomato soup and turn us loose with a pound of cornbread. There wasn't much discomfort about any of that procedure as far as we were concerned. We were in favor of it.
So, how did you keep your milk? I know milk was your number one.
In the summertime, we had had an extra pulley out in the well. Had to do one of these big round dug wells, and would let it down right near the water in the well to keep it cool. It wouldn't blink, say, the morning milk. Would be good through the day, kept that way, and when it was pulled up, Mama would take and skim the cream off of it to make butter, and then we would drink the milk. And the next day we'd go through the same procedure.
All right. I promise you we're at the last question here, and this is I want to do, Papa, just here in the last few minutes, just tell myself, Dr. Marshall, and whoever else listens to this tape, what you learned.
Now, who is Dr. Marshall?
Dr. Marshall is the professor that's having me do this
your
assignment.
Teacher?
Yes, sir. Having us do this assignment. And hopefully we'll make history. But getting back to this, just the last few minutes, if you could tell us and the listening audience what Ole C. Kidd learned from 1929 to 1939 or to the end of the Depression, from this period, how it affected your life personally, socially, and mentally. And I know this is a broad question, but this will end our interview.
Well, personally, through that time, naturally, it would make you, because of the condition of the times, it would make you very concerned and mindful of of your assets, of what you have, and what you're going to do with it. Going to take care of it, not throw it away, and not spend it unthought, you know.
Yes.
But be careful. It learned me to be thrifty.
Right.
And it learned me also, I should say taught, well learned, I guess would be better, that it doesn't take as much as people think for anyone to exist and have a good time. It's just on where you put your emphasis and your values. And the Depression gave you a good bit of time to think. I had a car payment all the time I was in the seminary. My car payment on my Plymouth was $24 and some cents. And that had to come first, because that was the only way I had to get into and from the church. And I paid for that. And we made a loan each month. I signed a note about $10 a month it amounted to. But we paid that after we moved to Tullahoma before the first note came due. My whole seminary debt of 3 years had been taken care of.
So that got you personally. All right, and that really could be put mentally, but emphasize a little bit more what it did to you personally, mentally wise.
Well,
I know this said it made you more thrifty, spend thrifty.
Well,
but
it made you alert in thinking of opportunities that come, whether there would be, and the value of an opportunity. Here something presents itself, and you find at the end there's just about $2 increase involved in the deal. It gives you an ability immediately to decide whether you do or don't.
Right.
You have a better sense of values is what I'm trying to say. It gave you a better sense of values. I don't know a better way to put it.
That's good. All right, Papa, what about socially? I know you were mentioning before when y'all passed around at seminary, you passed it, played around and helped all the other students there or the couples that were there. But how did it help you socially during this time? What did you learn sociably about this, about the Great Depression? From the period of the Great Depression henceforth, how did it help you on into life until the period right now that we're sitting here and doing this interview?
Son, I don't know just how to answer that. In a way, everything that happens to you, if you're in the right wavelength, the right condition, should be helpful to you, should be helped by every condition of life. I know there's no fun in doing about things, but the saying that misery loves company, when you're sitting doing about something, sometimes you can just think of many people beside yourself who are doing without more.
Yes.
And that all people have their needs and their responsibilities, and that we should learn through every condition we walk or we live to make a plus out of it instead of a minus. I don't know whether that's near what you had in mind or not, but
no, that was fine. Papa, I just I know you've been sick, and we went over an hour and something on the interview, and I certainly appreciate you giving me your time and sitting down and sharing this story with me. And certainly Dr. Marshall, told us to really thank our person that we interview, and on behalf of her and myself, I want to tell you I appreciate it.
Is Dr. Marshall related to Al Marshall in the Army?
I'm not sure. I know she's from Kentucky herself.
What place in Kentucky?
I think Louisville.
Well, that's a good place to be from.
Well, Papa, I appreciate it.
All right.